You've just landed inside Launch Street, the innovation podcast, where we interview top innovators out there shaking things up so you can innovate and differentiate and get further faster in this crazy cluttered world. And now, innovation thought leader and your super fly host, Tamara Kleinberg.
Hey, Launch Streeters, Tamara here, your host and lover of crazy rings. They are like my creative armor. On a serious note, have you ever wondered why some people are strong managers, but some are strong leaders? And what's the big difference? And why does having strong leaders lead to a culture of innovation and having strong managers lead to a culture of micromanagers? Fortunately for us, Art Coombs, CEO of Combia Corporation, speaker and author of Human Connection, How the L Do We Do That? Has some great experience and insights for us around this. He talks about the importance of the why and helps us distinguish between managing to the head and leading to the heart. He also has some great things to say about why spreadsheets never move people into action. Get ready. This is kind of a fun one. Art, I'm so looking forward to this conversation. So thanks for being here.
No problem. It's good to be here.
So let's start, since we're getting to know each other. What's the one thing people would be surprised to learn about you?
When you ask me a question like that, my mind goes blank and I become instantly boring.
You're like the most boring man in the world. It's like the opposite of the most interesting.
but here's what flashes into my mind when you say that. I'm a single dad. I have two girls. I have two boys and two horses. And I love what I do and I love who I do it with. There you go.
So it's like the modern day version of Noah's Ark, right? Two and two. Everything's by twos.
Well, yeah.
We'll leave it there. You're like, I'm not really sure what to go with that tomorrow. We'll just keep going. So I watched a bunch of your videos, which is part of the reason we reached out. And I wanna start by setting a little bit of foundation, because you have this kind of philosophy of lead with the heart, manage with the mind. So will you start there, and then we can kind of dig into kind of what you do and who you are and some of the other areas I wanted to ask you about. But that seemed to me like an overarching thing.
Yeah, no problem. I've been passionate about it for a long time. My vocational background is in the call center business, and I've been with some of the largest call centers on the planet, and we have literally managed, and I use that word deliberately, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of agents all over the globe. And so I was sort of in this, you know, environment where management was a necessity. And yet I felt there was a vacuum of real leadership. And so I became really passionate and just started to recognize the differences between management, which I'm not using in a derogatory or negative way. Management is necessary. I don't want any of the listeners to get me wrong, but management is completely different in my opinion than leadership. And so let's define management here for just a second. Managers deal with who, how, where, and when. This is what I want you to do tomorrow. This is when I want you to do it. This is how I want you to do it. And this is what I expect to be done. Are we clear? You know, that's a manager.
Here's your job. Here's the expectation of that job.
Here's your job. I want you to be in at 8. I want you to accomplish these tasks. Here are the tools you're going to use to accomplish those tasks. And at the end of 2 months, we're going to have a performance review, and I'm going to measure your results based on objectives. It typically, managers love numbers. It's always measurable. Were you in? Did you get the tasks done? You know, managers love spreadsheets. They love graphs. They love Gantt charts. All powerful tools and all necessary in business. Managers, though, if you really think about that, managers, all of that, I'm talking to your head. I'm talking to you intellectually. Now, let's shift this just a little bit and talk about leaders. So my definition of leaders is leaders offer a visionary inspiration, motivation, and direction. Leaders create an emotional connection between themselves and those they lead. Leaders attract people. Managers, you can always tell a manager because a manager will typically be in your cubicle or in your office and in your face. I'm managing you, right?
Yeah. I'm just laughing because it just so reminds me of Office Space, just to date myself. I'm just like, exactly. You know, the seeing the manager come down the hall and going, oh, good God, can I get away from them?
Exactly. But leaders, you'll know the leaders instantly. I love going to offices that I've never been to. And leaders are those individuals where you can see groups of people sort of congregating around their cubicle or congregating around them in the lunchroom. Leaders are those people that naturally attract people to them.
I love that visual differentiation of the manager walks into the cube, the leader, people are walking over to them. This may be a really naive question, but can you be both? Do you need to be both, or are you one or the other?
No, absolutely. You have to be both. Great leaders are also good managers. However, they understand the difference. They understand the difference. Leaders, again, are creating that attraction. Leaders are talking to the heart. Leaders lead with empathy, compassion, understanding, a soft heart. They're vulnerable. And it's in that authentic vulnerability that true leaders that attract people, that people are gravitated to that authenticity.
So tell me a little bit about – so if I'm listening to this, I might be asking myself – ooh, I wonder if I'm more of a manager or more of a leader. How do I become more of that great leader that also manages well? How do I know? Like if I'm self-reflecting, how do I know?
Right. So if you're communicating with numbers all the time to your people, you're managing. If you're talking about the who, the how, the where, the when, you're managing. Now, if you're talking about the why, you're leading. Let me give you a real-time example that just happened. And I wrestle with this all the time. I've been a very passionate advocate for the differences between managers and leaders. And I still fall into the trap of managing because managing is easy for people. Let me give you a real-life example. My son, he's 14 and he has homework issues. And every day after school, and I mean every day, I say, hey, is your homework done? Yep, it's done. Yep, it's done. No problems here, Dad. And I'm like, great, okay. And then the grades come out, and I'm looking at it, and I'm like, what the heck? I said, how could you have possibly gotten a D in history?
You did your homework. You told me.
And then I talk to the teacher, and the teacher says, well, he's missing 4 homework assignments. So then what's my natural reaction? My natural reaction is, okay, hey, listen, buddy, I'm going to take away your iPhone if you do not jump on your homework. I'm going to start punishing you. I'm going to start taking things away from you and creating pain in your life if you don't start behaving the way I want you to behave. And if you really think about managers in the workplace,
it's exactly the same.
There's always a veiled threat. Listen, tomorrow, if you don't do what I tell you to do, this is why we hired you. We can find someone who will, right?
Yeah, it's
so
a punishment.
That's management. So, and it's still a struggle. He's not getting his homework done. He's not getting his homework done. So then I upped my game a little bit and I said, okay, let's try rewards. So I said, hey, buddy, for every A you get, I'm going to pay you X. For a B, I'm going to pay you B. And for a C, I'm going to pay you C. If you get a D or an F, you're going to pay me. But at the beginning of every semester, I'm going to put a big stack of cash in front of you. This is yours. Now, we're going to put it in a little box we call the school bank. And at the end of the semester, we're going to tally it up and do an audit. And you can have all of it or you can have some of it, but it's up to you how much you get at the end of the semester. Again, it sort of worked, but really wasn't. I was trying to create a why.
Well, carrot and a stick, but not quite the how.
Yeah. It still wasn't working. Okay, so here's Paul Harvey, the punchline, the rest of the story. I'm lying in bed and I'm thinking about this and I'm thinking about my son and I'm thinking about how poorly I did in school and blah, 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 blah. And all of a sudden it hits me. He doesn't have a why. my son doesn't have a why. He doesn't understand why I am so passionate about him getting his homework done. And so all of a sudden, I woke up at 2 a.m. I go down to his room and I said, get up. And he goes, what are you doing? And I said, get up. I'm going to give you your why. And he goes, Dad, it's 2 a.m. And I said, just put your clothes on, put some pants on, put a shirt on. This will only take about 20 minutes. Come on. And so he said, all right. And so we're in the car and I said, Kai, we're driving down to Walmart. And he goes, why? And I said, listen, I'm not trying to be disrespectful to anybody or anything you're about to see, but I want you to understand the path you're on. I said, there are going to be people that are 35, 45, 55 years old, stocking shelves and pushing brooms in Walmart. And I promise you, son, that when they were 13, 14 years old, this was not their vision for life. This was not. But they made poor decisions when they were your age. They made poor decisions. And now they're forced to do this for a living. And so we walked around. And I said, Kai, listen, if you want to push a broom at 2 a.m, then that's fine with me. Push it with pride. I love you regardless. I love you regardless. If you want to stock the shelves, stock them with pride and make those cans all, you know, look amazing. But my gut is telling me you want to be, you're an entrepreneur, you want to be an amazing developer, you want to do cinematography, you want to be, a creative, brilliant web designer, and all of those things you can do. But it won't happen if you don't first develop the habit of doing your homework, loving to learn, and accomplishing goals.
So I have to imagine, correct me if I'm wrong, that he then got it together.
He was quiet.
Yeah.
He was quiet all the way home. And I said, you know, the hard thing about this is every night I ask you if you got your homework done, and every night I'm willing to help you do your homework. I won't do it for you, but I'm willing to help you. We can get straight A's. You can become anything you want to become. But if you make choices early in life, if you make the easy choice, the lazy, easy choice, and you don't do the hard things, later in life, your free agency and your options are limited. If you put in the energy up front, the hard work, and I know it's hard, then your options for who you want to be and what you want to do for a living are radically expanded.
So let me ask you this, because there's actually two things swimming in my head. One is a parenting one, because I have a 13-year-old boy with the exact same, like, I've been through. I can see you're talking like, yep, had that conversation last week. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to get his butt out of bed at 2:00 a.m. So we'll talk later about that. So he's like, thanks, Art. That's fabulous. Thanks for giving my mom the idea. But the second thing is making me think is, I think as a leader, I'm really hearing two things in that story. One is, it sounds like you've got to give people room to self-direct, and that's a little bit of the why. And the second part is, in some ways, some of the things that you really have to focus on with your team as a real leader are things that have a little bit of delayed gratification. You know, like when I think about our sons and the story you just shared, what we're really trying to get them to do is do the things they need to do today for tomorrow's benefit.
Absolutely. Let's take the first one. Let's take the first thought you first had, which is really powerful. And it's often used in a very trite cliche. When you give people a why, step out of their way, they'll figure out the how.
Yeah.
Managers remember what managers do. They focus on the who, the how, the where, the when. But if I were truly leading my son, I would be talking about the why. Why do we do what we do? Now, because he has this vision of why homework's important, I don't have to hound him about where you have to do your homework and how you have to do your homework. He manages himself. So the key thing here, you really know when you've become a leader, is you manage you and you lead others, which enables them to manage them. Nobody likes to be managed. Nobody likes to be managed. And here's one of my cliche. I love this phrase, and it's sort of a catchphrase I use all the time. People don't want to be managed. Managing someone is like they're an asset. No one likes to be thought of as an asset. People want to be led. They want desperately for someone to step up with a vision and say, hey, this is where I'm going. Who wants to go with me?
I love that. Launch Traders out there listening, I just want to stop on what Art said here about you manage you and you lead others. And I that what a powerful phrase. And I think as I even go through my day, I'm going to think about, am I managing myself? Am I leading others? Like, where am I? What am I doing? You know, one of the things that you said in a keynote that actually had me on the floor laughing, I'm not going to lie. And the audience, I think that you were talking to really resonated. It really resonated with them. You said, no one's ever gone the extra mile because of a spreadsheet. And I actually thought it was funnier because I'm married to a financial guy, which made me laugh out loud because I was like, oh, I see so many spreadsheets. But, you know, I think that goes a little bit to your kind of point about leading versus managing and the heart versus the head, that it's not about the numbers and the Excel and even the goal. It is about the why and the camaraderie and the leadership behind it.
It's about the why. It's about the why. I like to, on a daily basis, I try to envision what is the story my employees are going to go home and tell their significant other. Their family, their kids, their mom and dad, their spouse, their partner, whoever it is they go home to. Because in every scenario I've ever been in, when you walk through that front door, someone you who cares about you is going to say, hey, how was your day? Now, if all I've done is managed.
Wait, can I try what my answer would be?
Go for it.
I saw the sexiest spreadsheet. It had colors and it had numbers on it and it was landscape. I can't even think of what else I would say.
Exactly. Oh man, you should have seen the dashboard on our wall. It showed how many customers were in queue and oh my gosh, it was so cool.
Oh, I'm on the floor again. It's just hysterical.
No one ever does that.
Right.
Not that
stuff isn't important, but to your point, that's not what gets you out of bed into work in the morning.
No. Yeah. No. And as a leader, your job is to talk to the heart. See, when you give someone a why, when I showed Kai at 2:15 and we just quietly walked through Walmart and observed, I'm not talking about numbers. I'm talking about an emotion. I wanted to hit his heart because we're not motivated. Here's another one of my favorite phrases. You are not motivated to go the extra mile until the heart is convinced that the head has it right.
Tell me more about that.
You have to convince the heart that the head has it right. The facts are important. So again, your listeners out there, you've got to manage. People have to understand the numbers.
Right. And what their job is and expectations and all that.
Absolutely. It has to be clear. Good manager will clearly lay that out. But a great leader will say, this is why I want you to do it. Not just for the company, but for you.
So I want to ask a couple things on this because so you are the founder and the CEO of, and tell me if I'm not saying this right, I would say Combe Corporation, but tell me if I'm wrong.
Cambia.
Not even close. Did you catch that?
No, you're fine.
Like it wasn't even on the same plane. Cambia.
it's all good.
Cambia. Now I'm going to say it right. Which is in the customer care world. And I've done work with SOCAP, the big customer care association. Yep. And I love this field because I think it has such this amazing ability to be in the front lines with the customers and to really hear their problems and their challenges and what they need and what they want. It's just such an interesting field to me. As a leader of a company that works in that field, do you find leading to the hearts also not only allows people to do their job better, but to really bring that innovation, that creativity, and that kind of higher level productivity to the work? That was a roundabout question, but what I think I'm trying to get at is I think there's a difference between doing your job and really bringing that higher level drive, desire, innovation to the table.
Yeah, so I can answer that in a million different ways. So one, the challenge with the customer service industry, whether we like it or not, that a turnover is horrific. It's a really thankless, hard job, taking call after
problems all day.
Call after call after call, and you're tethered to your phone, and you've got to be there at a certain time and answer so many calls. And if you talk too long, they get on to you, and if you talk too short, they get on to you. It's so metric driven that it's a little wonder. It doesn't surprise me that that industry is so management driven.
So I was gonna say it's heavily managed, is what.
Heavily. Yeah. They measure everything to the millisecond. I mean, it really is. It can be neurotic. But so let's talk about creativity and leading. So when in the definition of leading, remember the one in our definition of leading, and what I think is really important is there has to be an emotional connection between the leader and those they lead. Spreadsheet's never going to do that. Managers don't ever really care about the connection. I can literally manage, and I have done it sadly, thousands of people, and I don't know their names. I just know them almost by numbers. I can manage them effectively, but I could never lead them. Leaders have to have that emotional connection. Now, when you get that emotional connection, you have to create an environment where you are vulnerable. And here's one of the key traits. I know creativity is firing on all cylinders when people in the office tease me and in good nature make fun of me and sort of we banter back and forth. When your coworkers feel so comfortable that they can be that loose and that relaxed, you know you have an environment where people feel safe, where they can make mistakes, where they can be creative, and they can really let those juices flow.
So let's talk a little bit about that, because, you know, I think what I hear you saying is there's a big difference between a workplace that focuses on human connection and one that focuses on spreadsheets. And I also hear you saying you need both, right? You need metrics. You got to know how you're doing, but you really need to focus on those human connections. Give me some tips. How do you do that? If I'm going to walk into the office after listening to this podcast, you know, on the way to work, what are one or two things I can do to help build that?
I would sort of dive in instantly into the second book I wrote is Human Connection, How the L Do We Do That? And it's sort of tongue in cheek. But it sort of serendipitously backed into what I call the five L's: living, being present. You have to be present. You cannot lead people without being present and in their face and available for them. It also involves laughing. It involves learning. You not only have to be able to teach, but you have to be able to be taught. It involves leading and the ability to also be led. And it involves loving, true loving. You have to be able to love empathetically, understand the scenarios and the situations. Let me give you another really quick example. I was living in Europe and I was setting up a massive pan-European call center. We were doing 13, 14 languages out of Amsterdam. And I had about, I don't know, 1,500 employees there. And I made a massive mistake on one of the projections with a client. And I lost the company about $500,000 one year on just one simple mistake. The company was doing an IPO back in the United States, and so this $500,000 was a big, big deal. And one of the things I learned really quickly is when you learn you made a mistake, you take it instantly to your boss. Don't bury it. Don't try to hide it.
Don't try to fix it without just own it.
Yeah, just own it. Take it instantly to your boss. But I remember having the discussion with my wife going, I've got to make this call today, and I may be terminated. I mean, this is a big, big deal because leveraged over an IPO, we're talking about multiple millions of dollars. And I was really anxious. I was really nervous, but I knew I had to make the call. And so I called the CEO and I said, hey, I got to chat with you about something. He goes, sure, what? And I said, well, I'm going to cut right to the chase. I made a mistake with this client. I bid it out inappropriately. I didn't notice it until 8-9 months later. Long story short is I've lost about $500,000 on this one account, and it went right to the bottom line. And he was quiet. And I honestly thought I was going to be terminated. At the very least, I thought I would be reprimanded. And he says, Art, do you know what you did wrong? And I said, absolutely. I know now what I did wrong. And he was quiet for a few more moments. And he said, great. I don't expect it to happen again. He goes, now, I know your wife just had a birthday. How's she doing? And how's insurance? Wow. How's insurance over there in Europe for you and your family? Are you feeling comfortable? I mean, he totally dove into my family, my wife, my kids, and I was reeling. It was one of those surreal moments where I was like, I honestly thought I was going to be terminated. And so I stopped him and I said, whoa, hold on here a second. I am really mixed up. I said, John, I honestly thought you were going to terminate me or at least reprimand me in some way. And he said, this is so powerful. He said, Art, terminate you? Why would I terminate you? If there's anyone that won't make that mistake again, it's you. I just invested $500,000 into your education.
I love that.
Now, what did he just do for me and freedom and feeling safe and feeling creative? I'm not going to second. I know my CEO has my back.
Yeah.
I know he has my back. So I can be creative and I can take chances. I can risk. I can do innovative things and not feel nervous that someone is going to say, that's the stupidest idea in the world. You're terminated. You're fired.
Well, first of all, thank you for sharing that story, because I know if I'm out there listening, and as I am sitting here thinking, oh my gosh, I mean, the number of mistakes I've made over my career is too many to count. But more importantly, what I really remember about those mistakes is the response from the person I worked for. Who I did it under and how they responded, and kind of your points about, you know, I think underlying having a culture of innovation, which a lot of organizations talk about, is that human connection and that willingness and a permission to be vulnerable and make mistakes and know that people have your back, because I think that's probably what holds us back the most, is not feeling secure.
And you just hit it right on the head. I don't focus so much on innovation as safety. When you have an environment where people feel vocationally safe, where they really truly feel that they're okay and they can make mistakes, innovation just naturally sprouts like weeds. It's just like, whoo.
Yeah, I can't remember which Google research it was, but one of them talked about that innovation happens because of its personal and professional safety. At the end of the
day,
is what it boils down to. And, you had mentioned your book. We'll put a link in the show notes, Human Connection, How the L Do We Do That. You opened up with a statement that just kind of got me thinking. And I think this is exactly what you're talking about, which is, you said in the book, what is human connection and how do we make it meaningful and lasting? Will you talk a little bit about that lasting part?
I think we as individuals – And whenever I hear a motivational speaker or I'm speaking in front of an audience, I rarely am hearing something that I go, wow, that is completely new to me. No, I don't. But what I hear, I think most people know what they're supposed to do, but it's an issue of either putting it in a context that resonates to them and talks to the heart, so they're motivated to change. They know mentally what they're supposed to do, you know, but when you talk to the heart and the heart's convinced that the head has it right. So I think great leaders are great cheerleaders. They say it repetitively over and over and over again. You know, one of my favorite things, here's another, you know, sounds like a trite phrase, but it's one of my favorites. In real estate, we've heard it, right? Location, location, location. In leadership, I would say communication, communication, communication. And when you communicate and communicate and communicate, you will get inspiration, 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 not just for you, but for everybody. it spawns everything. So the more you communicate and the more authentic you are, the more you can get people to laugh. Because remember, think of laughter. Think of that emotion. You've never laughed at a spreadsheet. Never.
Only laughed at the fact that I had to look at it again.
Yeah. But no one ever looks at a spreadsheet and goes, oh, that's so funny. But when you invoke an emotion, it goes straight to the heart. Those are the moments that you're going to share with your significant other. Those are what you have to, when you talk about sticking to this and creating a culture that wants to stick, you've got to create moments that they will truly want to go home and share with their spouse or their family or their kids and go, hey, you won't believe, you know, something stupid I used to do in the call center. And it was the silliest thing on the planet, but I used to dress up like Tarzan and I would get a whole cart full of cookies and milk and bananas and fruit and vegetables, but I'd push it through the call center and I would hand out cookies and milk dressed as Tarzan. But every cube I came to, I would say, hey, are these pictures of your kids? Tell me about them. But if you really think about that, and if you think about the five L's, I'm in their face, I'm in their cube, I'm in their environment, I'm present, I'm laughing with them, I'm in a Tarzan outfit. You couldn't help but grin when I walked up. Just wasn't going to, you know, we were learning about each other, we were leading each other, and we were loving each other. And it only took just like 2-3 minutes. And yeah, okay, we had, 600 people in that call center. So it took, you know, a couple of hours to walk through the call center. But the impact of that was just unreal. Those are the types of things when you went home at night and you said, how was your day?
You're like, let me tell you about Tarzan and his cookies.
Yeah, you should have seen the CEO. He's like dressed up as Tarzan, man. He's walking through the call center.
You know, the thing I have to say, though, that I want to pause for launch readers out there to really hear in this story is I think what Art, you do an incredible job of is allowing personal and emotional to be inside work. I think the mistake I often see in organizations, you know, my area is innovation, but I think in leadership in general, and even in particular, when you're trying to build that, you know, culture of innovation where there's trust and vulnerability, is it's as if we tell our employees, do not bring your personal, your emotional self to work. Like your personal life is your personal life, and this is work. But we spend all day at work.
Yeah,
I don't know. And we're everything, right? We're all of the above. So why do we separate the two? And I hear you saying the opposite, like, hey, it's all one. Let's just own it.
I had a massive one more quick story. I had a massive lesson taught to me by a good friend of mine. But we had this particular employee who was constantly late to work, constantly late to work. In fact, so much so and so consistently that the HR was going to write him up and, you know, start the proceedings to terminate him. HR came up to me and said, Art, would you please, as the CEO, would you please take the bull by the horns and talk to this guy? So I go and talk to him. His name was Doyle. I said, Doyle, what's going on? You know, and he goes, oh, I'm so sorry. I won't do it. And he was late again. And I pulled him up to my office and I said, let me show you numerically why you can't be late for work. You know, this is what happens financially.
Here's the impact.
Right. Here's the impact. I'm managing, right? Because I'm using numbers.
Right.
I'm using data.
Right.
But I'm trying to analytically talk to his head. I'm, you know, this kind of stuff. So I got frustrated and I said, okay, this is it. Terminate the guy. Well, one other individual in our company said, wait, let me just chat with him once. And I said, okay, great. You got one shot. And so I happened to be down in the IT area and I was looking at this little tiny conference room off to the side. It had one of those windows along the side that you can look into. And I could see Kirk and Doyle in there talking. And Kirk is laying it on thick. I mean, he is, and I was like, yeah, you get him, you know, tough love, you know, and I had these emotions, right? And I'm watching this play out. And all of a sudden, Doyle starts to cry. And I'm like, oh, Kirk, you laid it on
too far, too far.
Now we got an HR
problem. Rein it in, rein it in.
Yeah, we got an HR problem and all this kind of stuff. And a couple minutes later, they get up and they open the door. And now I'm able to hear the conversation and they embrace each other. And Doyle says, and looks in Kirk's eyes, red, moist, teary eyes, and says, "Kirk, I had no idea. I am so sorry. I won't be late again, I promise." Now I'm stunned. I'm like, holy smokes, what just happened? So I call Kirk up into my office and I said, "Kirk, I couldn't help but notice I saw you with Doyle. What was going on?" And I said, "What did you tell him?" And he said, "Art, what I told him is, Doyle, you're not late for work. You're late for life." He said, "You're not late for work. You're late for life." He said, "Doyle, you're late for telling your wife you love her. You're late for sending a Valentine's card. You're late to go to your child's baseball game. You're late to go to parent-teacher conferences. You're late for paying your bills. You're late for mowing your lawn." And he started just ripping down all these personal things. And I said, "How did you know all that?" And he says, "I didn't. But when someone has a habitual trait like that, it manifests itself in all aspects of their lives." And so you can't – real leaders understand we're not dealing with assets like a desk and a computer. These are human beings. And if you don't think you have to allow the person at home and the person in the office to be one and the same.
Yeah, that's a great example of seeing the whole person versus seeing the asset.
You can't. And it affects. But once Doyle saw – that we knew what was going on, and he saw the big picture, right? Because Kirk gave him the why. Now all of a sudden, Doyle's really motivated to change.
And let me guess, he stopped being late to work.
He stopped being late to work.
That's so great. Absolutely. So before I ask you my last question, because I can't believe we're almost out of time, where can people go to connect with you and learn more?
They can follow me on Instagram or Twitter, and that's at Arthur F. Coombs, or they can go to Facebook. And this is sort of a tongue twister. It's Arthur F. Coombs. And I've got a www.artcoombs.com. So artcoombs.com site.
Awesome. And we'll put all those links in the show notes too. What is one final piece of advice you have for launch readers out there that, you know, they're going to work, they want to create more of those human connections to get all those results you were talking about?
I would reiterate what I've already said. People don't want to be managed. They want to be led. If you want to manage someone, manage yourself.
I love that. Thank you so much. This has been so enlightening. I took copious notes for my own company. So this is like selfish on my part, but it's been fantastic.
Hey, thank you so much.
For real, did you get as much out of this interview as I did? I especially like the part where he talked about how you should think about managing yourself and leading others. I thought that was really powerful. So how do you become a better leader of others? I know. Have your team discover their innovation strengths, how they perform at their peak and contribute to the team. And as one of our clients just told me, it's showing them a path for bringing their best self to work. Give yourself and them the tool to bring that best self, that most valuable self to work. So just go to gotolaunchstreet.com and click on the innovation assessment and it'll take you to the right place. Believe me, when people understand how they innovate, how they have that stronger, more valued voice, leading them is a ton of fun. All right, Tamara out.
Thanks for hanging out with us inside Launch Street. When you're ready to take your game to the next level, join the thousands of others that are upping their innovation edge on GoToLaunchStreet.com, the top online education resource and community platform for innovators looking to use innovation to get measurable results. GoToLaunchStreet.com.